You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
.07 in the morning, you're on Wake Up Tucson, third hour of barely award-winning radio here at Wake Up Tucson. Yeah.
It's award-winning.
Oh, that's true. Sorry, Mark's here.
Doesn't matter how close the ballot tally was.
Again, it was great seeing a lot of old friends last night at the AdFed Hall of Achievement. Matt and I were there. Eddie A. was there.
Yes.
Alan Michaels. It was
Dave Slavin.
Jimmy Arnold. So Anthony DeFazio, who now runs Clear Channel boards, right? Last time I saw him was the last one of this. So as I'm walking out, he goes, "Man, it was great seeing you today." I go, "Well, same here, Anthony. I'll see you in 365 days." So that's where we see each other. So we got Jason Bedrick coming in. It sounds like a movie star. Jason Bedrick coming on at the bottom of the hour to talk about ESAs save you money, not cost the taxpayers more money. Just like it's like Matt Beinberg 2.2, but I want to get it from a different perspective. So Mark Van Buren's here. Dr. Van Nostrand, my pickleball partner.
I am indeed.
You're going to be out of town, so we can't start our doubles career at the Lara Tucson Action Team Save Every Dog Pickleball Tournament.
Yeah, I was looking forward to that. We'll have to do one later on.
So we can do that another day. We have to start our doubles career.
We do.
Because we're always beating each other up during singles.
We'll see if we can beat somebody else up.
Well, we went out there and over the weekend, and we got out there at our usual 5:30, and it was actually dark at that point.
It was kind of dark. And yeah. And when we quit, these guys go, you're gone already? I said, "Hey, man, we were here at 5:30. He goes, "So isn't it kind of dark?"
They're like, "Yeah, we're real pickleball people.
We play with glow-in-the-dark balls."
Well, I can hear the wind going through the ball, and that's where I know.
Speaking of wind, when I came in, it is windy outside.
Blustery, baby.
Yes,
way blustery.
Big time.
All right, if you're just checking in, we're doing top 10 Alec Guinness movies, considered one of the greatest actors ever.
Indeed.
I'll say that. You know, I know a lot of you Nicolas Cagers are saying,
No, this guy would be in my top 10 for sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, we're at number
four. Kind Hearts and Coronets, another 100% movie. And this one, I know I've been saying his movies are unique. This one is extremely unique because the storyline is this mother from this very aristocratic Italian family. She elopes with an Italian opera singer to the chagrin of the entire family.
Was that Enrico Palazzo?
No. No, it wasn't.
Okay, sorry.
But thank you. So anyways, they shunned her. So when she dies, they refused to let her be buried in the family mausoleum. Okay?
Okay.
So what happens is there's 8 siblings of hers, and they're all played by Alec Guinness, and the son plots to kill all of them.
So this is the Alec Guinness description of who he plays.
Yes.
The Gascoigne family, the Duke, the Banker, the Parson, the General, the Admiral, the Young Gascoigne, Young Henry, and Lady Agatha.
Yeah. It's amazing. And they're all distinctly different. And this demonstrates his ability to transform characters. And you totally buy into each one of these characters. And it's just absolutely amazing. I think you'll love it.
I love it. So Kind Hearts and Coronets.
Yeah, it was done in 1949, and you can see it on Amazon Prime.
I love it.
There you go.
Oh, I do have an Amazon Prime review for you, everyone, when we're done, but I want to finish this off.
Look
with
at you.
Yeah.
Next one up is, I know your favorite, so you can help me on this one, Star Wars. 96% by the audience, done by George Lucas in 1977. I saw it on opening night, and I was working in Gurnee, Illinois at the time.
Oh, I love Gurnee.
Gurnee, Illinois, and I saw it on opening night because I was off that day. And I saw him interviewed about this film, and he really wasn't a big fan of science fiction, but he was captivated by the script, and the more he read it, the more he liked it. But he told George Lucas, we need to change a few things on my dialogue, and he did. And they were so impressed with him that they gave him 2% upfront of the picture. And obviously, we know that it was one of the highest grossing films of all time. And what happened after the movie was filmed, Lucas called him up and said, we're going to give you a more percent. And he goes, really? And he goes, yeah. And so they gave him a quarter percent more. And in 1977, that his share on the bonus amounted to $9 million, which was a pretty hefty payday.
So watch on YouTube a video interview he does about the little interview snippet.
Yep.
So he talks about George calls him back. I'm going to give you extra quarter of a point.
But it was really a half a point, and then when the finance guy called him back, it was only a quarter of a point.
Right, and so what happened? He's like, well, what happened to my...
Well, he wanted to get it in writing, but George never did it, so, you know, what are you going to do? But again, this is it's just a great film, and when he talked about the film, he said it had great pace, it was innocence, it portrayed innocence, and it was fresh. Yep. Right? All of those things. It was just wonderful. Now it probably isn't so much those things today because there's been so many sequels, but that's what he thought of the film. I thought it was a great film.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, unlike anything we've ever seen.
Yep.
Actually, while you were on vacation, I was having this discussion with Mark about it's kind of how Star Wars and these franchises have slipped.
Yeah,
since Disney bought them and things
sure.
like that, right? But we were talking about how one of the things with Star Wars, it had that it was like space, right? And
right.
ships and everything, but it looked very lived in,
yes.
right? Where everything else was always clean and pristine,
right?
Right. We watched those Flash Gordon. It looks like a clean room.
Or the Starship Enterprise. You
all
know,
those like, things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
and
right.
so this was the kind of lived in dirty look to the room,
right?
Joseph Campbell archetypes of heroes, or all these things came together, and then the special effects were amazing.
Yeah, they were
right for 77. You can still watch them now and go, man, it's pretty impressive.
It is.
And John Williams destroyed it amazingly on that soundtrack.
Yep.
And then also, and Alec is part of this too. Alec and Peter Cushing brought some acting chops to a film that again had a lot of young people in it.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
what I mean?
True.
Right. And so getting Peter Cushing as one of your main bad guys with a Darth Vader like character, that's a winner.
All the actors on set were very appreciative of Alec Guinness because of his professionalism. He kept them all in line, but I think when Harrison Ford talks about him, he talks about him as a mentor, you know, because he really, really was a professional on this film.
The my last geek thing, we're going to go to break and then get to your last two,
yep.
is I think it was Peter Cushing did not like, because you know, he was like a military officer.
Sure.
So they had him in these boots, you know, kind of almost, because they got to look like a Nazis a little bit, right?
Right.
But they were very uncomfortable.
Sure.
And so what happened was he asked George if he could do more shots like waist and above because he wanted to wear comfy slippers. So as he's doing these menacing lines to Carrie Fisher, supposedly he's wearing slippers.
So, well, you know, like, you come up with something.
That's your useless geek fact.
When you have short actors like a Tom Cruise or people like that, a lot of times they'll have their co-star walking in a ditch.
That's true.
You know, alongside of them. So they appear to be level, you know, in height. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me that somebody would come up with something like that.
All right. Two more flicks with Mark when we come back. And then Jason Bedrick from the Heritage Foundation. Emerson, Lake and Palmer versus Electric Light Orchestra.
A good 20-minute long progressive rock song.
Well, actually, when Bedrick's done with, we're just playing the rest of Tarkus.
Okay.
Wake up. Look at us. ELP versus ELO, which I think is a pretty rockin' Friday playlist. We got two more movies with our friend Mark Van Buren. We're doing top 10 Alec Guinness movies. And then Jason from Heritage Foundation will be on at the bottom of the hour. All right, number two.
There you go. Lawrence of Arabia, 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. Another David Lean movie, 1962.
Yep.
Stars Peter O'Toole, Alec Guinness, and Anthony Quinn. Anthony Quinn, I think we talked about this before. He did his own makeup for this, right? So he's got the giant nose and everything. And it was just, you talk about three great professional actors, O'Toole, Guinness, and Quinn, all in the same movie. Wow. It's just amazing. I'll let you talk about it. It's a T. Lawrence. I know it's one of your favorite films, a T. Lawrence.
So they filmed this for a while.
Yep.
This film. This was not, you know, done in a 3-month shoot kind of thing.
Nope.
And while Peter O'Toole is always, I mean, he's always been a great actor.
Yep.
Right. This is the one that blew it up.
Big time.
Right. Yep. His performance is just off the charts. The charts in this.
Yep.
In that day where cinema was pushing those widescreen VistaVisions and all of these things,
yep.
David Lean doing those shots of the desert and the vastness of it.
Just amazing.
It's still impressive to this day.
Yep.
Right? So, like, people will tell you, if you're going to watch Lawrence, it's fine on a big TV, but if you see it in the theater, better.
It's such a great experience, yeah.
Right? You can see that the French guy, I forgot his name, who did Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Right, kind of had that same kind of using that same kind of thing, but he has CGI where David Lean was spending months and months in the desert with these crazy shots.
Yep.
Lighting's important, right? That's the thing that's you don't realize. Just like you just put a camera out on the desert and said, "Wow, there's some desert."
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Right. I think Lawrence of Arabia inspires Star Wars, right? In relation to Tatooine, right? And the vastness of Tatooine and writing it out there.
Sure. Yeah.
All those things. So maybe it's related in George Lucas's mind that he hired Alec Guinness, Prince Faisal, to be his Obi-Wan Kenobi in the vast desert.
Indeed.
Just saying. But Alec Guinness, back to him as Prince Faisal.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, you totally buy into the fact that he's an Arab, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's just really good in it.
Every line that he delivers in Lawrence.
Sensational.
He's not on that long.
No, he isn't.
If he's got 15 minutes of screen time in a 3-hour movie, I'd be surprised.
Yep.
It's awesome.
It is. It really
it's just awesome. Again, Anthony Quinn, Omar Sharif, Jose Ferrer, Jack Hawkins, Anthony Quayle, Claude Rains, Arthur Kennedy. I mean, it just kind of keeps going.
It does.
It's a winner. So Lawrence of Arabia, again, to me, we're going to get to Quai, but to me, this is the ultimate David Lean flick. Is
every one of these, like I said before, though, every one of these movies, I would encourage people to really view in on a few of them, and they're all on free TV, so you know, check it out. You can see that on Prime Video, but it is they're sensational movies. They really are, and they're so unique, because isn't that what we're looking for now in movie making today? There's not a lot of unique stories out there.
Well, we're doing Despicable Me 5 or something like
that.
Well,
it's just like we can't come up with something better than that. It's just, it's crazy.
Hold on.
Yeah.
No, we can't do better than that.
We choose not to, because I guess they think they can make more money by doing this and not have to pay a writer, you know, for presenting a new story. I don't know.
What's your, Bridge on the River
Kwai. Bridge on the River Kwai. I remember when I first moved to Tucson, it was one of my favorite movies. I'd seen it several times, but I had never seen it in the theater, and they were showing it at the Fox, and I brought Sydney and my wife down there, and we watched it, and it was fantastic, and it still is. It stars William Holden, Alec Guinness, and Seishu Hayakawa as the commandant of the prisoner of war camp, and just a sensational movie about these guys that are... what happens is the Japanese have to build this bridge for this railroad to go through, and they're botching it up. They're not doing a very good job. So the commandant finally comes to Alec Guinness as the leader of the prisoners and said, "Would you help us?" And he goes, "Yeah, we'll do it." And he wanted it on his terms, and it was driving Seishu Hayakawa nuts, but he agreed to that, and they started building the perfect bridge. I mean, it was sensational. And the ending, I won't spoil it for you, for a few of you who haven't seen this film, but it is just epic.
So, I mean, the tension comes when someone who was a prisoner escapes.
Yes. Right.
And he's sent back to destroy the bridge.
William Holden, yep.
And that's where the tension comes in.
Yeah.
And so for you, the Alec Guinness character, why would he aid and abet? Why was he aiding and abetting
I think that was a byproduct. I think he realized that if we're going to do something, we're going to do it well. Okay.
But why did he do it in the first place? What do you think? This is just getting deep film discussion.
Well, I think he had to keep his troops interested and keep them motivated because you were prisoners of war and you basically can fall off to the side and just say, we'll just have to wait it out. And I think he wanted to inspire them. He indeed did that.
Yeah. As the best last two words of any movie ever, madness.
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 Yeah.
My Amazon Prime review is, because this is right in Christy Simone's alley.
Okay.
Season 2 of Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power.
Okay.
So I did donate 3 hours of my life over Labor Day weekend at various times to watch the released first 3 episodes.
Okay.
Trash.
Wow.
Absolute trash. This is $1 billion budget, a billion with a B,
okay,
for this show. The first season was not good.
Okay.
This is like, the best description I've read so far is it's shoddy fan fiction.
Really?
It's horrible. If you said, I powered through the first season, I'm going to go give this a shot again. Maybe it got better. Got worse.
Has it been reviewed?
Oh, yeah.
And?
Let's see where the rotten's at. The fans hate it. You can just tell. And I guess
I think they try to pull the wool over your eyes, like you're supposed to get this, right? And when you don't, it's just like it's your fault.
Let's see where the Rotten Tomatoes has this at. Okay, so they have fans at 48%.
Ooh,
and the critics are at 83%.
See, that's again.
They're just lost.
When there is what I have found is if there is a big disparity between the fans and the critics, the critics are wrong.
Always wrong.
Oh yeah, always wrong. You know, always.
You could tell that if there's things in the movie that press the correct, politically correct buttons for them.
Yeah.
There's like an extra, they build in an extra 20 to 30% higher in their rating.
I think you're right.
Again, and the one that hit me was the first Black Panther film.
Okay.
The movie that you and I both like.
I liked it, yeah.
Even though the lighting was so bad in the final battle that I couldn't see what was going on, right? So I would have given Black Panther somewhere around a 75 to 80-ish.
I was just saying the same thing, yeah.
96% on Rotten
Tomatoes. Well, because it's politically correct, and you certainly don't want to be accused of
any
discriminatory behavior.
No way is Black Panther. What'd you just give me for the Rotten Tomatoes for Lawrence of Arabia?
It was 93.
Right, so you're telling me Black Panther is a better movie than...
No flipping way.
I can hear the lefties listening to the show. Oh, you love it when your boy Alec Guinness culturally appropriates an Arab, you SOB.
Please. Isn't that what acting is?
That's what
it, right?
Something else. Well, thanks for a nice time with Alec Guinness.
I really enjoyed this one, and I learned a few things along the way, and I just learned what a great actor this man was.
Absolutely. Thank you for your efforts, as always.
Oh, absolutely.
See you on the pickleball battle courts this weekend.
We will make an attempt.
All right, we're going to go to break. Jason Bedrick's calling in from the Heritage Foundation, and he's been doing some work on this thing called Empowerment Scholarship Accounts on how they're not costing the taxpayer extra money. They're actually saving the taxpayer money, like we keep telling you over and over and over again. You're on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Uh-oh, it's a little hoedown. Here we go. All right, ELP versus ELO on a Battle of the Bands playlist day today. Matthew D. Neely, Christy Simone, and you. Let's go right to the phones. Jason Bedrick, Heritage Foundation. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so one of the things I do, and I torture all Heritage Foundation people, what is the cool title you have over there?
Just research fellow, nothing too fancy.
Oh, so no junior or senior at that point, right? You're not a senior research fellow.
No, I'm in my 40s, so past junior, not yet senior, you know?
So I saw this story with you and a guy who's been on this show before also, academic freedom champion par excellence, Corey DeAngelis.
Yes, my protege.
Absolutely. And at the same time, we're, of course, do a lot of work with Goldwater, and we've had this discussion a few times with, of course, I know you know, Matthew Beinberg over at Goldwater.
Sure.
So tell us about, and we keep hearing Katie Hobbs and all these Democrats and the media that doesn't like to do this thing called research, that school choice and these ESAs, Empowerment Scholarship Accounts, are draining the budget and hurting public school and just fiscally irresponsible. Jason Bedrick,
yes.
Response.
Yeah, so yeah, Katie Hobbs has been saying that it's bankrupting the state, it's unsustainable, and they pointed to earlier this year there was a massive budget deficit that they've now closed, but they were looking at a almost $1 billion budget deficit, and they were saying, well, it's because of tax cuts and school choice, obviously. It's not all of the other programs that the Democrats support. It's got to be the tax cuts and the school choice. But the thing is, the Department of Education just released their budget for the year where they closed the fiscal year ending in June, and they had a $4.3 million surplus. So I'm not great at math, but I can tell you that if you have a surplus, it cannot contribute to an overall budget deficit. So the problem is clearly not coming out of the Department of Education, which includes, you know, the public schools, the ESA program, and a whole bunch of other things. Now, people have pointed to, if you drill down into the numbers, the ESA program did cost $92 million more than was projected because it's been so popular, so many families have been opting to go that direction. But they have to also look at the other side of the balance sheet. Because of changes in student enrollment, there was a $93 million less spending in the public and charter school sectors. So it's about $500,000 that they saved overall.
So when I was looking through, when we see, we lovingly call her racist, Katie, due to her legal problems. When they refer to ProPublica and the Grand Canyon Institute, explain who these characters are, Jason Bedrick.
Yeah, I mean, the Grand Canyon Institute is a left-wing think tank in this state that is consistently wrong. They have been pushing this message over and over that it's going to bankrupt the state, making wild assumptions. You know, for example, one of their assumptions to reach this conclusion that it was going to cost almost $1 billion was that 80% of the students participating in the program were already going to be in private school. Well, the latest figures from the Department of Education show that in the most recent cohort, 62% of students that were taking an ESA were switching out of a public school in the prior year. So, I mean, their assumptions are wildly inaccurate, and of course, the results they come to are wildly inaccurate. And ProPublica is just another left-wing outlet posing as a media outlet that is constantly coming after the right, never any scrutiny on the left, but they pretend to be objective.
It's funny, when I look at the Grand Canyon Institute board of directors, I do like that they put their political D behind each of the directors' names.
Well, at least they're transparent about that.
I was like, I've never seen that. If you're gonna, we're I'm sure they say they're nonpartisan.
Yeah.
So when we talk about, and it's a discussion we've had with Matt over at Goldwater, is that, so we're talking about the we always get into that per pupil funding amount, like how much is it costing the taxpayers? So you're saying basically it's a little cheaper in the end, what we're learning. It's just it's definitely a little cheaper to do an ESA for a kid than to send them to a government K-12. Is that the final discussion here?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the ESAs are funded with 90% of the state portion of per pupil funding, 0% of the local portion, and 0% of the federal portion. So anytime a student switches sectors, it's going to save a considerable amount of money, some to the state, but a lot for at the local level. But you have to factor in how many students would have gone to a private school or would have homeschooled anyway. But the thing is, I mean, you're going to have an upfront cost which we've already sort of seen with, you know, once the students that are already doing that take it. But as the program grows over time, you're drawing more and more students that would have gone to a public school. So the net effect over time is to save money.
And I think you brought up a good point about the variety of sources for funding, right? So in this piece, we're talking about $7,500 for an ESA kid, $12,000 per pupil that for a kid that goes to a K-12. But that difference in the $4,500, that is going to be no local for this, and the no federal and local money goes to the ESA kid. I just want to make sure that gets out there.
That's right.
So what's we know the Republicans can do the best they can sometimes to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory here. I guess if they don't hold these two legislatures, this academic freedom's in for a world of hurt. Correct.
That is the way things look right now. Unless some Democrats have a change of heart, the programs do look like they would be in trouble. The Democrats have been saying for many years that they would abolish the ESA program or at least scale it back so it's not available to everybody in the state, that they would cut the tax credit scholarship program, and that they would also impose all sorts of regulations on these programs that would make it very difficult for them to operate. So obviously the conservatives have been much better on preserving education, freedom, and choice.
My last question for you, just a little off this specific topic, is do you think parents have the best data knowledge available, and that's promoted to them on where to find it, on how bad their local school, public schools are? Do you think that's something that we do a good enough job in the academic freedom world? Even though I know 75,000 kids or whatever the number is great, there's a lot of ignorant parents out there. How do you think we do with the ignorant parents out there?
You know, it is hard to say. There's not a lot of great data out there. And even where, you know, the state tests and stuff like that, parents, I think, are kind of tuned out to what these things say. But I think overall, there is no perfect system. There's all trade-offs. So the question is, who should be in charge? Should it be elected politicians and state bureaucrats that pay no price when they make terrible decisions that have lasting negative effects on children? Or is it parents? Parents aren't perfect, but we have to compare them against the alternatives. Parents are the ones who are the closest to the children, know them best, love them most, and really do bear the consequences. You know, as a parent myself, when your child is hurting, you know, they say, especially moms, that a mom is only as happy as her least happy child, right? So when you see that your child is not getting good education, it's the parents who are suffering for that. So we really should be structuring incentives to give parents the maximum freedom and flexibility to make decisions about their children's education.
Jason Bedrick, I appreciate the good work as always, and we'll talk again because this is going to keep coming up and up. We got to keep defending. So I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Jason. That's Jason from the Heritage Foundation. We come back. We got, it's a potpourri. Tabs, emails, stuff falling out of my head. That kind of thing. We have on Monday's show people and other folks. Joanne DiFilippo, of course, and Mayra Rodriguez coming out against the infanticide proposition. You're on Wake Up Tucson. Oh, there we go.
All over the world, Christopher.
I thought ELP, ELO was a good combo today.
I think so, too.
I was tapping my toes. Don't care about yours, but I was tapping mine. So, I was thinking that we'll do some more on Monday, but we were talking about reading levels. And
it's better than Fog Hat versus Foo Fighters, I'll just say.
Oh, don't do that. Someone yesterday, one of the guests, was it Daryl? He said Bolton versus Manilow. I said, there's a lot of cheese on that bread. Anyway.
Humperdinck versus Tom Jones.
Oh! We're doing that. We're totally doing that. Humperdinck Jones. Whoa. Just to let you, I want you to give you some reading levels of some of our local school districts. Just to give you a little update on how bad it is out there. Okay? TUSD third graders that can read is 30%. Third graders. The one I'm starting to learn you got to be scared about is the fourth and fifth graders. That is the COVID kids, the COVID kindergartners and first graders. I'm hearing from multiple teachers they are horrified by the lack of reading skills of fourth and fifth graders right now. Good idea over there, as we like to say. AmFi kids that can read a third grade is 42%. As a total school district, AmFi is at... Because, you know, everyone thinks AmFi, well, you know, Oral Valley and Ironwood Ridge and blah, blah, blah. The entire school district of Amphitheater is only 44% of kids can read at level K through 12. What's the TUSD for the whole school district? It's worse. Hold on. TUSD, are there like 35,000 kids right now? Where are they at right now? Only 30% of the entire school district of TUSD can read at level. This will be the next person to work in the Lane Santa Cruz office. It'll be fine. And vote for her. So I asked, are there any churches coming out against the infanticide proposition? So Jeff said, our church, the Shepherd of the Hills Evangelical Lutheran Church on Hardy and Northern, that's that nice little church that's just north of OVCN on the Mike Hine drunk roundabout of Hardy and Northern. That's the one that he got busted over there. So we got that. Charles Heller wants to know, is the event tomorrow that I'm doing with Austin Vanderhaden recorded? No. And you got to go. So info@northwestrepublicans.com, 8:30 in the morning, Gaslight Music Hall, Oral Valley. Come to the beautiful valley and see roads and grass and all of those crazy things out there. Chris King said that his church has been fighting against this thing from the beginning, so that was good to hear. So I got like three churches. Let's see. Clarissa, my husband took some friends yesterday to Juan's Taco Rustico Dos. Period. Juan has new converts. So we got that going for us. So I still want to hear about what churches are coming out against the infanticide thing. Because the Catholic Church hasn't, my Catholic Church, and I don't think Bishop Weiselberger has said much. Because remember, he's getting money from the Democrats who want it. So, we'll be fine. Let's get to Reina Preciado over at, it says, they found out some guy took ownership of one of those little strip malls on Speedway in Swan. But she talked to Lois Polak, the president of the Garden District Neighborhood Association. The neighborhood's been keeping people informed through the weekly newsletter. Updates on safety. Businesses lost an entire day's worth of revenue that day, so we're concerned about it because we've seen businesses after business pick up and move. Shocking. Businesses in the strip mall on the southwest corner of Speedway, this is southwest corner, not the one where it happened, right, have relocated due to violence, leaving several vacants. Is this the one that had the Play It Again Sports in it? I think so.
Maybe.
August 5th, the owner of Zane Investments LLC finalized the purchase of several units on the east end of the strip mall. This is the owner, Jamal. I am definitely concerned about the violence. Hopefully TPD will step it up. I guess he didn't see the story with the guy from the tent place that says he's registered with a no trespass thing with TPD and they never show up. It's just, I'll let you know. Let's go back to the HOA lady. We hope the new businesses are good neighbors. Be a good neighbor. Being a good neighbor is not hard. Keep your place clean. You know what the best part is? I don't know. I can't. I don't want to blame Lois altogether, but Raina, you know, and she edits it. I don't know what Lois said overall. The part is Lois, whatever part they use from Lois mentions nothing of the criminals doing. She's like, oh, I hope the businesses can keep the place clean. You know something, lady? 97% of places are keeping their place clean. Because you know why? They'd like to make it a place that people will spend money.
Their customers prefer it.
Right.
It makes it inviting to their customers and employees.
Small business owners respond to Kamala Harris's tax relief plan. The first person that, who did this? Maria Staubs at Kagan interviews is Raul Aguirre. You can't find a guy more connected to power and the machine in this place than this guy. It's like asking, he's like the version, like it's asking Larry Hecker or one of the classic cronies of Pima County. Like, oh, how's this Democrat proposal? And then he goes into full Tony the Tiger mode. It's great. Maria, do some research, lady. Renee Romo, K-O-D. And of course, Peter and Tara told us about this, the electric school buses at TUSD. Matt Neely, I know you got work to do. We got 4 minutes. Go.
They're paying $620,000. If I read the story right, they got a $4 million grant from the feds. They got a million from some sort of a rebate program from TEP. They got a $1.2 million that you voted for. You voters voted for the bonds, which were for school safety, I thought.
That was what they led, school safety. Infrastructure.
So $1.2 million. So that all adds up to about $6.2 million for 10 buses. That's $620,000 a bus. They're not going to get them. So there's the bait and switch, I think, on the bond. They're not going to get them till December of 2025. And they need 6 months to figure out how far they'll go on the routes and how they're going to charge them. So you're going to spend $6.2 million for something that you can't use until June of 2026.
Now, here's the best part.
Oh, and they have to have special thermal things to keep the batteries from blowing up. And, you know, with the kiddos.
So here's a question that, I don't know if it's in the article, maybe I missed it. How many buses do you think TUSD owns and runs, Matt Neely? What do you think? This is 10.
TUSD?
TUSD.
75.
300.
300. Oh, goodness.
So they did 10 out of 300. Get out of here, Ackerley. I'm sick of you. Cookie! He opened the door and he threw me a DoubleTree cookie.
And you were mean to him and you got a cookie.
That's
the wrong kind of reinforcement.
I yell at poor Ed and I got a cookie.
Positive reinforcement to your negative behavior.
So again, they bought the buses, 10 out of a fleet of 300, right?
And they want 10 more. And what does a bus cost? These things cost $620,000 a piece. And a school bus, what, 100,000 maybe?
But a regular school bus, probably about 100 to 120,000.
Good grief.
For something
they're
sweet.
Throwing your money away for something they don't even know if they can use.
Correct.
Good grief. You guys keep voting for these bonds.
So the question is too, right, is who do they interview from the who is this bull person? Ken, the fleet manager. So he says a diverse fleet of multiple fuel.
Diverse. Well, yeah. We have to tell each bus has to have its own story and narrative. I need to live my truth as a bus.
I love the fact that they're testing to see how far they can drive.
Right. Right. After they spend the money.
Al, you got 47 seconds. Good morning.
Okay, my quick thing is I heard an article about this in Alaska. They still have to use Old Bessie 3 or 4 times a week because their electric bus won't last long enough. And in the winter, it only goes a fourth of the route. Was that good?
That's perfect. Thank you, buddy.
Have a great day, guys.
Have a good weekend.
Great show.
Thanks, buddy. And again, as Matt said, this is from the article. He also added new buses are equipped with thermal management that monitors the batteries, ensuring they don't overheat.
Oh, and one other little kernel of information I got from the story, gleaned from the story.
Yes, sir.
TUSD hired a bond manager, and apparently to be a bond manager, you have to be a PhD.
Dr. Charlotte Carter.
A bond manager.
Remember when they said, oh, everyone's always said too much higher money on administration, and then you got this? This is part of having the bond manager was the part of your confidence to vote for this trash in the first place.
As G. Gordon Liddy would say, oh, ye suckers.
All right. Ed Ackerley's coming up. He's got our friend Janet from the Doubletree. They're relaunching the restaurant.
Javelina.
It's just called Javelina. Not the and no cantina, just Javelina. I like it. We'll find out more with Dr. Ackerley. Everyone have an amazing weekend. Remember, info@northwestrepublicans.com if you want to see me and Auster Vanderhaden do the ballot proposition dog-e-pony show. Matt, have a great weekend.
You too.